Hi, I'm Marian McPartland. Today on Piano Jazz, my guest is the acclaimed vibraphonist, pianist, and composer, Gary Burton. Not only is he a marvelous player, he's also one of the most influential jazz educators around. Gary, it's great to see you.
It's great to be here, Marian, and great to see you again.
It's been a long time.
I know.
Since you were 17.
Well, even before that, actually, I went to a club in, of all places, Evansville, Indiana, near where I grew up, and you were playing there. And a local pianist who knew me said, you got to come down and hear Marian McPartland. So my parents brought me. So that was before I had a driver's license, so I must have been 15 or so.
Oh, my goodness.
And heard you play. And that was I didn't know who you were until then. So then I started getting your records and so on. And
really?
Yeah. And then I met you when I moved to New York a few years later. And
with Joe Morello.
That's right, because I knew Joe Morello, who was, of course, your former drummer and friend. And he introduced us again. And then you, I didn't even know if you remembered this or not, you were instrumental in getting me my first full-time job, which was with George Shearing.
I do remember that because I must have heard you play with Joe. Didn't he have a big band record?
That's right.
And you were in the band.
I was in the band.
He thought you were the greatest thing since the wheel, and you were. And so then I heard you, and George was looking. So I said, here's this wonderful young guy. And then you wrote something wonderful for George, like a whole album.
Yeah, He always loved contrapuntal music, like Bach, and he was after me to. I had done some arranging of other of standards and things for him, but he said, "Write me something that uses counterpoint." So I just made up a little blues that sort of was Bach style and wrote it, and he loved it and said, "Okay, do a bunch of these, and we'll do a whole record of them." So that was the most writing I'd ever done up to that point. But over the next few months, we rehearsed all these pieces and went into a studio and recorded them. It was really one of the first large recording projects I'd ever done, and he was the inspiration.
You were what, about 19?
I was 19, exactly.
Oh, my goodness. And you, I remember exactly how you looked with the white collar. You looked like a schoolboy, which you almost were.
Yeah, that's true. When I see pictures from those days, I can't believe how conservative
wonderful.
I was.
They were with George. What a kick. Boy, so many things to talk about. But first, I'd love to hear you play something. It's been too long.
Thank you.
What have you got, piano or vibes?
Well, I'll play the vibes. This is a piece that I learned from Stan Getz. After I left George's band, I moved on and played for several years with Stan Getz, and it was during his bossa nova years. And this was one of Antonio Carlos Jobim's compositions. It's called O Grande Amor.
Oh, that's a great tune. Love that. Thank you. That's such a good tune, and I don't hear it that much.
I know. In fact, I can't think of anyone else that I know that has recorded it. And yet it's one of my favorite of the Joe Beam pieces. And I hear his other, you know, almost standard ones all the time. So I love doing this one.
It's funny. A lot of times people don't sort of pick around for something different. They go with the what is popular or something like that.
Yeah, that's true. I've always had some instinct that said to look for the songs that haven't been done so much. I figure if you're going to do a song that everybody's recorded, you have to come up with a really strong original version to stand out. But if you pick something people aren't used to hearing, you don't have to work so hard at it.
After you were with George, what happened then?
Well, I would have stayed longer with George. I just played with him for 1 year, but he decided to break up the band for a while and stay home and do a radio show, which in Los Angeles, which he did for about a year before he resumed touring again. So I found myself back in New York, unemployed all of a sudden, and before I could even get my first unemployment check, the phone rang, and it was Stan Getz asking me if I would be interested in playing. He was actually looking for a pianist, but hadn't found one. And Lou Levy, who at the time was Peggy Lee's pianist and an old friend of Stan's, had told him about me and said, well, there's this vibes player who plays with four mallets who might be able to substitute for a piano. So Stan was kind of desperate. He only had a week before the gig started, and he needed someone quick. So he asked me to come and sit in with his then group, which had a guitar player, Jimmy Rainey, who was leaving, asked me to come and sit in for a set with them to see what the vibes would sound like. And it was a complete disaster. I didn't know their tunes or their arrangements, and I wasn't sure what Stan wanted me to do, and it didn't go well at all. And he said, okay, well, thanks anyway. It didn't seem to work. But 3 days later, he called again and said, you know, I'm desperate. Will you come and work at least?
Well, but you played such good piano, too.
Well, not good enough for him, I don't think. He was a very particular player. But he said, come and play 3 weeks in Canada with us, and then that'll give me a chance to find someone else. And I said, well, you know, I liked the other two guys in the band were friends of mine. And I thought, well, it'll be fun, something to do, and I'm not employed, so I might as well do it. And went to Canada, and the first week we didn't seem to find much rapport. But by week two, it was starting to come together, and by the third week, it was settled into a pretty nice sound, and he was happy with it, and so was I. So I ended up staying for 3 years.
That's a nice story. But Stan Getz was a hard guy to work for, wasn't he?
Yeah, particularly during the years I was with him. You know, he has one of the most colorful histories as a jazz musician. You know, he had many drug problems when he was younger, and then he had a long period of alcoholism, which was during the years I worked for him. And he eventually overcame all that by the time he got yet older, and I was happy that he finally had got on top of all those things, at least, you know, for the last phase of his career. But working for him, there were a lot of ups and downs, because there'd be days where he could barely function, and his, you know, behavior would be very unpredictable as a result. But when he was having a good night, he was fantastic.
Wasn't he, though? I remember hearing Stan play Here's That Rainy Day in Carnegie Hall, like with no microphone. Just, oh, it absolutely, I remember it to this day. It was such a strange guy, but he could really touch your heart with him.
Well, I learned, you know, I often say this about both George Shearing and Stan, that from George I learned about harmony and about timing, how to pace the music. He played wonderful solo pieces, which were an inspiration for me to play solo pieces too. From Stan I learned about melody, The first thing I noticed playing with Stan was how powerful he could be with the listeners. I mean, sometimes we would play a ballad and he wouldn't even solo. He'd play the melody and let me solo, and then he'd play the melody out, and he would dominate the piece. You know, his playing the written melody would come across more powerfully than my improvised solo would. And I suddenly said, boy, there's something going on here with the melodies of these songs that I wasn't paying much attention to up to that point in my young, you know, development as a player. So he totally changed my my outlook on what my role as the improviser was and how to communicate with the audience.
Speaking of which, I see you've picked a wonderful tune. And dying to hear you play it. Blame It on My Youth.
Yeah, I learned this from George, actually, who used to play it occasionally, and I always admired it. And then this is by Oscar Levant, one of his, as Oscar said, his one attempt at writing a hit song. And it sort of has become a hit.
It has.
In a very quiet way, because it's still around and people still play it. It has great lyrics as well. But I love playing it as a solo
piece.
Very
romantic. Mm-hmm. Well, can't wait.
Thank you.
You managed to make that very tender and very all the things that tune should be.
Well, thank you. My inspiration actually was a version by Carmen McRae. And a lot of times I get my inspiration from singers, the way they phrase. Another thing Stan taught me was to listen to singers to learn how to phrase melodies and how they give meaning to the music with the lyrics. So
that's
I often
true.
Picture the lyrics while I'm playing the melodies of songs.
I think we all do. I've come to that conclusion mm-hmm. talking to different people. Everyone seems to remember the lyrics when they're playing.
Yeah.
And it makes you do certain things within the tune.
That's right.
I think. Well, there'll be more in a minute with Gary Burton. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR on the web at pianojazz.npr.org. There's so many things to talk about, so many things that I remember about you, and just can't get them all in today, but I'm trying. How about another tune, though? I mean, we should do a duet.
Yes, absolutely.
What have you...
Well, how about Yesterday's? It's an old Jerome Kern classic.
It's a tune, and I love to play the tune, but there's something about a minor tune that... they always seem to feel good. And
uh-huh.
So I love this tune, and let's have at it and see what we can do.
Okay, here we go, Marian. Thank you. Well, that was great, Marian. It's great to play with you again.
Well, you too.
But I want to hear you play a solo piece. You've got something you can do?
Well, I might as well do one of my own tunes. Cy Coleman was always lecturing me, Marian, you should play more of your own music. And this one's called So Many Things.
Thank you.
That was beautiful, Marianne. Really terrific. I loved that.
Thank you. Glad you liked it. Well, if you're just tuning in, my guest today is Gary Burton. I'm Marianne McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. Well, we should play a Duke tune, shouldn't we?
I'd love to. I think the song we're going to do is one of his more interesting compositions. It's called Sophisticated Lady, and a lot of people know it. But as a composition, it's really pretty sophisticated.
There are these
descending chromatic progressions and key changes and so on. This was a very creative piece of work for its time, and musicians have continued to love it to this day because it's such a different kind of construction from most of the standard songs that we have around.
Yeah, and when you get to the bridge, you have to be careful not to fall off.
That's right. That's a good way of putting it. Well, let's give it a go.
Okay, let's do that. Thank you.
Well, that was a lot of fun. It's always great to play duets.
It is, and you sure have played a lot of duets in your time. All your life, it seems.
Well, I spend most of my time these days playing with two piano players, sometimes Chick Corea, sometimes Makoto Ozone. And actually, I feel like when I play the vibraphone with a pianist, that it really feels to me like it's two pianos, because my instrument, when you look at it, it looks like the piano keyboard.
It does.
And I think like a piano player. And I've always thought that was why I haven't had an easy rapport with both Chick and Makoto, because I think our thought processes are very similar.
Must be, because you turn out such terrific music all the time.
And it's been a combination that's worked for a long time. Chick and I have been playing together for over 30 years, and I've been playing with Makoto for 20 years now. And they're each very different types of players. So, people sometimes ask me, what's the difference? Or do you like one better than the other? And I have to say they're so different that for me, I have a completely different experience with each one, and love playing with both of them equally, and look forward to every gig that we have together.
Well, whatever it is, I mean, you've turned out such marvelous music, and lately with the classical thing that you've done with Makoto.
Well, that was an experiment that paid off, so to speak.
An experiment,
We got the idea because Makoto, we were trying to think what to do for the next record, and we were having lunch before a gig in Arizona, I think it was. And Makoto had just come back from Japan, where he had done some concerts with some orchestras. So he was talking about this Mozart piece and other things he'd been playing. And that got us talking about classical music and classical piano music in particular. And then it just hit me, maybe we should try to do something with this. So we decided we'd prepare just a few pieces first, because this was going to take a lot more work than playing a few standards. We were going to have to learn these pieces and then rearrange them so we could improvise on them. So we picked a piece by Ravel, a piece by Scarlatti, and I think one other in the first go around, just to see if we could pull this off. And we liked it so much that we then went to work and learned, six or eight more pieces so we could make a whole record of them.
That's wonderful. You may even do another one.
Well, it was a lot of work. I'm taking some time off from the classical for a while.
Well, see, now what you're going to do is, by contrast, I mean, it's pretty easy.
Well, I'm going to play another vibraphone solo on a favorite standard of mine, and it's called My Romance.
Oh, that's a great tune. Thank you. That really is such a pretty tune, but as usual, I can't think who wrote it.
Well, I recently found out it was Rodgers and Hart, another one of the great songwriting teams from that golden era of songs, it seems, with Cole Porter and Jerome Kern and Irving Berlin, and all of them were just cranking them out year after year.
They were, weren't they? And again, you picked one of the lesser-known tunes, which is great.
That's what I try to do.
And you do it. Well, we'll be right back. My guest is Gary Burton. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR on the web at pianojazz.npr.org.
I noticed that the song we're planning to play next is also by Richard Rodgers, and possibly his most famous one as far as musicians are concerned, because I think this is one that everybody plays at one time or another, and singers love to sing it. It's My Funny Valentine.
Oh, that's one everybody wants to hear, too.
That's true. You
get
a lot of requests for this.
So we've got the right choice.
Yeah.
So this is going to be our...
Well, you talked me into this. You've
our piano duet. Did I talk
duet.
You into it?
Well,
you play such good piano. We've got to have this. So let's see what we can do with
okay.
it.
Thank you.
It's funny, that tune, I don't know, I don't get tired of that one.
No, in fact, I think I've probably recorded it about 3 or 4 different times over the years. I used to play it as a solo piece early on, and then I played it, recorded it once with Jim Hall, and because I'd always admired his version that he had done with Bill Evans on a record back in the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And wanted to do it with him. And then I think I recorded it with one of my bands as well, as a swing tempo piece. So I've given a lot of mileage.
You may give it a fourth go-round if you play it with this young man you've discovered.
Oh,
Julian,
you're talking about
Lodge.
Julian, yeah. This and guy, he's so, you know, exciting. This is a new musician on the scene. He's a guitar player. He just turned 16. And we recorded together last year. The record just came out called Generations. And he was 15 when we made the record. And he's wonderfully mature as a player and yet has all that excitement of a young player. He's a wonderful composer. We played 3 of his compositions on the record. This is a name that is going to be very big in the jazz field in the next few years.
That's great to hear you say that. We need some terrific young players. You know, I hate to think that we've got the last tune coming up because I've had such a ball talking to you and playing with you.
Well, same here.
It's a kick.
It's been great.
And we mustn't wait so long for the next time.
Absolutely. I'd love to come back.
Meanwhile, we're going to play something by your 30-year buddy, Chick Corea.
Well, it's of course, been a pleasure to have played with Chick all these years. Our first project was in 1972, and we're still going at it. Every year we do some gigs.
And you'll go at it for a very long time.
That's our hope. This has been a real enduring partnership that we've had. So we picked one of his classics.
That's a great idea.
Which is Windows. I think it was George Shearing who came up with the line about the one thing that he and Chick had in common is that they both do windows.
I love that. Well, let's do windows.
Okay, here we go. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. Thank you.
That's a lovely tune to end on.
It is. And I can't tell you what a pleasure it's been to see you again, to play with you again.
Me too,
thanks,
Gary,
for inviting me.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland. Her guest today has been Gary Burton. Join us again next week at this time for another outstanding hour of music and conversation with Marian and her guest. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant engineer Chinook Kang, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production manager David Lyon. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is Piano Jazz ETV Radio, 1041 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. Information about the guests and music heard on Piano Jazz and how to get our weekly preview podcast is available on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Jazz Times Magazine, now celebrating its 40th anniversary of delivering jazz news, insight, and opinion at newsstands everywhere and on the web at jazztimes.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And MetLife Foundation, committed to promoting healthy families and good nutrition, on the web at metlife.org. This is NPR.